Stand by for Activate Live, the Machinist Union's webcast, which will begin in just about 1 minute. Today we're talking about a new trade agreement called USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. We'll learn what it is, what it means, and if it will make a difference to workers in the United States, Mexico, and Canada. So I'm sitting here with Delaine Adams. And Delaine, this is our pre-show, the show before the show. We have about a minute to go. What else is going on?
Oh, a lot of good news. So I can't wait to talk about some of our organizing victories and strikes ending and great efforts from our legislative department. So
it's always good.
Great news to share.
That's right. It's always good when a strike ends,
yes.
Especially when it has an effective agreement afterwards.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm just trying to start my stream, so I'm looking so that I can see everybody's comments when they do comment. So it is actually 3 o'clock, so let's get started.
All right, let's do it.
Activate your voice!
Fight for your right.
Speak up.
Speak out.
We're union, and we're proud.
Go union.
I'm Tanya Hutchins with the Machinist Union, coming to you live from the Robert Kolaski Studio at IAM headquarters. Thanks for checking us out. Here is Delaine Adams with the latest IAM news. Delaine, what's going on?
Tanya, we have some great news going on today in the IAM world. More than 100 Swissport workers, ramp service workers at Chicago O'Hare's Airport, voted to become members of the IAM. So welcome to the IAM. Welcome to your union. Some of the issues included safety, work-life balance, and respect on the job. So we definitely want to welcome those members from Chicago.
That's great news.
Great news. And as always, it's always great to see a strike that ends, and also we get great great improvements to our contract. So I am members of Local 1297, District 54, employed at Vesuvius U.S. Corporation, ratified a new 5-year deal, and they ended their strike. They received wage increases and improvements to their 401k. And another important addition was early retirement agreement. And so that was added for employees 61 and over. So it's definitely important to take care of the retirees. And having that agreement in place was a victory. So congratulations to everyone out there.
That means a lot.
It does.
You're actually going to have some retirement security.
Yes, we all need retirement security, and so we definitely have to keep continuing to fight for that at the bargaining table and in the halls of the legislature. So,
and you have news of a very powerful letter that was written.
Yeah, we really want to thank Representative Rick Larson from Washington State. He led a bipartisan letter signed by 177 members of the House, again, signed by Republicans and Democrats. And it urged both us and Boeing to sit down at the table and come to an agreement with our new members in South Carolina. They urged Boeing to respect the decision of the flight line technicians in South Carolina who voted to join the IAM. As you well know, that big victory in May was huge, not only for members of South Carolina, but all over the nation.
That's a lot of signatures.
That's a lot of signatures. And great work by our legislative team for making sure that happened and this letter came to life.
I think that sends a strong message when we have so many members of Congress asking for both sides to come together. So
yeah, both sides. It's, you know, and going forward, hopefully they'll look at this letter and we'll sit down and we'll get a first contract. So. And speaking of great news coming from the halls of Congress, the Senate today cleared a 5-year reauthorization of the FAA bill. So that's great news. Airline labor highlights of the bill include protection for our customer service agents and also a 10-hour rest rule for flight attendants.
That will help so much. I know we've been asking for that for a long time.
Yeah, a lot of great work done by not only our legislative team, but Transportation Department. Members of the Transportation Department really worked hard in making sure that this bill was passed. And now it heads to the White House, and hopefully it'll get signed soon. Sooner than later.
All right. Well, we'll keep you all up to date. Thanks so much for keeping us up to date, Delaine.
Thank you, Tanya. Have a great show.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
All right.
Well, if you are just joining us, we are talking today about, we have a little camera here. See, it's right here. And this is our behind-the-scenes camera. We use it for Instagram Live. And it just fell over. So I just wanted to explain to you what that little noise was. Sorry about that, Instagram people. But I will put that right back over there as we get ready for our next guest. So it is being called the next or the new NAFTA. Now remember the North American Free Trade Agreement? The one that we hoped would be a fair trade agreement? Remember that? Well, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement is now known as USMCA. And I am Trade and Globalization Director Owen Hernstadt, is here to help us sort it all out. So Owen, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and I noticed my last name was spelled correctly on the teleprompter,
that's
just a good day for me. Thank you.
Excellent. Yes, it's a challenging last name, but once you get it, you got it, you know? Okay, so we actually have a few graphics, and I didn't warn him to show what we were going to show on the screen, but we have the preamble from this new agreement that they call USMCA, or the new NAFTA. So we pulled a line out of there, and it says to support mutually beneficial trade. How challenging is that, and is that truly possible? And what does that mean, mutually beneficial trade?
Well, for us, mutually beneficial trade means mutually beneficial trade that benefits, that works for workers in all three countries, the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, that are part of the deal. If it doesn't work for workers, it's not going to work for each nation's economy, and it's not going to work for the North American economy as a whole, and ultimately, it will hurt the world's economy. For us, I think it's very important to keep what's going on in terms of the new trade proposal. Some people call it NAFTA 2.0. Others have drafted a new name. But the real issue is it going to restore manufacturing work and raise the standard of living for workers in all three countries on it? And I think it's very important that we keep it in mind that trade and this agreement is just one tool that we hope will achieve that. But it has to be looked at as part of a comprehensive package that puts workers first. It means raising levels of pay here at home and in Canada. It means also raising levels of pay for workers in Mexico. It means making sure that corporations are accountable, like the great job our sisters and brothers in Washington State are doing with their own proposals to make sure that corporations are kept to be accountable when they promise jobs here at home and get certain tax benefits for it. It means making sure that federal institutions like the U.S. Export-Import Bank, which was created to support and maintain good manufacturing jobs at home, actually can do their job. Right now, it's being held hostage.
What is the status of that now?
Well, they're still waiting to make sure that there are enough board members that have been appointed that can actually form a quorum, that can actually support or approve deals in excess of $10 million, which is a lot of work that American workers do. So right now, we're in an unfair advantage with other countries that do have their own export-import banks on it. So it has to be seen with a large, comprehensive package to make sure that we actually have a policy here that brings manufacturing back, but not just brings manufacturing back so that workers can be laid off the next time the economy goes downhill. It means bringing workers back, building up their communities that have been so devastated in the last several years, and doing it in a sustained way. We can't keep going through this cyclical boom-bust of employment, particularly in manufacturing. We're losing a lot of our seasoned workers to other industries.
Now, this agreement is saying that we're supposed to be promoting and protecting the enforcement of labor rights. So even though a lot of the words that we want to see are in there, how can we make sure that this agreement is enforced?
Well, let's start off with looking at the original NAFTA, because we'll use it to compare that with, but we'll also use it to see if it will achieve our goals. Our bottom line is pretty simple. We have to stop corporations from outsourcing our work in the United States and Canada to Mexico to take advantage, and this is the to take advantage part, this is the unfair part, to take advantage of our brothers and sisters in Mexico who don't have the fundamental human right, it's not being enforced, to form their own free and independent unions and to engage in collective bargaining on that. So for us, the bottom line is, will any agreement stop this outsourcing in manufacturing and in other sectors, especially in aerospace? I'll talk about that in just a second.
Yes, I was going to ask you about aerospace versus automotive.
And raise the standard of living and make sure that labor rights, fundamental human rights, as announced by the United Nations and its umbrella in its agency, the International Labor Organization, to make sure that those fundamental human rights, the right to form a union, the right to collective bargaining, prohibitions against child labor, forced labor, and of course, discrimination of any kind, is actually in a law, but is also enforced. Now, let's go back to NAFTA, if I could. So when NAFTA was implemented in the early 90s, one of the victims immediately was were our workers in Galesburg, Illinois, when Maytag decided they were going to shut down and move the work to Mexico. I still remember the words of one of our members who lost their job with that announcement. And he said, "I want to tell all of my sisters and brothers to beware that NAFTA is coming for them." He said that over 20 years ago, and wow, he was right. NAFTA has come with a vengeance. Several hundred thousand jobs have moved from the US and Canada to Mexico, where workers earn, you know, maybe $3 an hour doing manufacturing work, where they're not free to form their own union, and where they're not free to engage in collective bargaining. The standard of living for Mexican workers has gone down in that time, and we've seen company after company not only shift work to Mexico, but threaten to shift work to Mexico to hold us in check and use it as leverage when we are bargaining for decent collective bargaining agreements. And also to let their workers know, particularly in the US, that in some cases, and they do it fairly subtly and sometimes not so subtly, that if they vote to join one of the strongest unions in the world, they too will be a victim of NAFTA because they will be moving work to Mexico. I recall many years ago after NAFTA was passed, a company in the Midwest, we had an organizing drive, manufacturing company. The plant manager shows up to work wearing a sombrero. Someone says, "Why are you wearing a sombrero?" And he says, "Because if the union gets in, we'll be moving to Mexico." And then he laughed on that. Well, that was not funny to folks that wanted to join a union on it. So it's serious.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, since NAFTA was implemented, aerospace work, as well as manufacturing, has been shipped to Mexico in leaps and bounds. Now, aerospace jobs in Mexico have grown to approximately 40,000, in part, because of the low wages paid to Mexican workers on that. It's an attraction part.
And they're not making anywhere near what the American workers were.
They're not making anywhere near what U.S. aerospace workers are making or what Canadian aerospace workers are making on it. And almost every company is down there, or their suppliers. We've seen Some work move, like wire harnessing work, but we've also seen some of the most innovative, advanced, new technology work also moving to Mexico as well. So when you talk about fair competition, it's difficult to find how we've had that under the old NAFTA.
Now, with this new agreement, and we've already learned from NAFTA, does this seem any better than
Well,
NAFTA?
We're still studying this.
Okay.
The actual text was just released, so we're looking at it with a very critical eye. We're looking at every single chapter of the agreement, and there are over 23 chapters of the agreement.
And the 23rd chapter, which you mentioned, is the labor chapter, which we have a picture of the beginning of it.
And we're analyzing it very closely. We have said that NAFTA 2.0 must represent a dramatic change in how NAFTA was originally presented. We have said that it must contain clear and unambiguous labor standards in the actual labor chapter so that people don't have to be confused about what rights are included. We've also said those rights must be applied broadly. You can't cut out certain sectors of the economy. In other words, say, yeah, that may be a labor violation, but it doesn't qualify as a labor violation under this trade agreement. We've also said that whatever standards are settled upon, they have to be enforceable. They have to be effectively enforced, unlike as in past trade agreements. We need to make sure that behavior is changed, that ruthless corporations and irresponsible governments do not turn their backs on the actual labor standards that are reflected in the agreement. So we're studying it very closely to see if that will indeed be achieved and achieved in the short term. We're also studying it very closely to see if there are disincentives there for corporations to outsource our work to Mexico. This is obviously critical, and it goes hand in hand with the whole issue of labor rights and with the whole issue of fairness.
What is the general consensus that you're hearing among the labor, organized labor community in these initial reactions?
Well, I think initially everyone is looking at this very, very closely at this stage. We want to see what the pluses are and what the minuses are. We want to talk to other affiliates, for example. We'll talk to the United Auto Workers to see what they think specifically about the rules of origin, language that was put in for auto workers to see if this indeed is going to be effective. We want to see what other affiliates are talking about as well. That said, there are things that we see that could use improvement. For example, issues in the labor chapter that we would like to see stronger, that we're hoping there still is some flexibility to do that. We're hoping to see very strong and very credible and very effective enforcement mechanism that I just mentioned in Mexico. We're looking to make sure that there's an appropriate structure put forth to enforce labor rights in Mexico, and that there is or are ample resources set forth to indeed accomplish that.
You know, you brought up a good fact that in North America, we have workers that represent in the United States and in Canada. How do Canadians fare under this agreement from what you've read so far?
Well, I think we're working through it with our Canadian brothers and sisters as well to take a look at it and to take a look at all of the chapters with respect to it. There are issues with dairy in Canada and others that we'll be talking about with our sisters and brothers in Canada. That's not to say that there aren't some improvements in the labor chapter over what was in the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is really what we compare it to because that's the latest model out there. There are some improvements, But what we want to make sure is that the improvements are deep enough and substantive enough and go to the heart of the issue of making sure that labor standards reflect international labor rights, fundamental human rights, that they're clear and unambiguous, that they'll be implemented fully, that Mexican labor law will actually be changed to make sure that all of those rights are included, and that to make sure that Mexico implements an effective enforcement mechanism.
For people that are not, familiar with the International Labor Organization, tell us very briefly just what it is and these international labor standards that have been out there.
Absolutely, and let me straighten something out that gets confusing sometimes for people. The International Labor Organization is not a union. The International Labor Organization is an agency, an institution that was created under the United Nations many, many years ago. The ILO, as we call it, is tripartite, meaning it has employer representatives, government representatives, and worker representatives on its governing body. And over the years, the ILO has adopted what are known as conventions. These are the labor standards, the labor rights that we refer to. They have several, many, many different conventions. In specifically, they have some what we call core labor conventions, known as core labor standards. And those reflect the freedom of workers to join their own unions, to form their own unions. It's known as freedom of association, as well as conventions that protect the rights of workers to negotiate collective bargaining agreements, as well as, I mentioned a few minutes ago, fundamental prohibitions on forced or prison labor, child labor, particularly the worst forms of child labor, using children as prostitutes, yeah, as mercenaries, and other incredible things that are just too terrible to even imagine, mm-hmm, and as well as fundamental prohibitions against discrimination against workers for gender, for race, religion, national origin, age, disability, gender preference, etc.
So I see a lot of those words in this new agreement, this new NAFTA agreement about prohibiting child labor. But I think you're right. It boils down to enforcement and the stronger language that we're hoping will be in there.
That's exactly right. And as always in any of these things, the proof is in the details. Mm-hmm. We would never sign a collective bargaining agreement unless we had time to read the exact agreement and to read all of the details, including those that have yet to be finalized on that. This trade agreement is no different. We will review it closely. We'll look at it, particularly in mind of the fundamental objectives we just mentioned, that is stopping this outsourcing from the US and Canada to Mexico, as well as making sure that workers in all three countries are able to enjoy fundamental human rights and that their living standards can actually go up. That the new trade agreement won't be like the old trade agreement. We want to make sure that plants won't be closed after NAFTA 2.0. Mm-hmm. We want to eliminate the transfer of work because of a trade agreement. So we'll be looking at it carefully with respect to that. And we'll continue to offer our strong suggestions to our trade negotiators on how we think it can be improved.
It's interesting that the word trade isn't anywhere in the title of the agreement, which just seemed odd to me. But at least with the North American Free Trade Agreement, the word trade was in there. I don't know if that matters or not, but I just thought it was odd.
Yeah, you might want to ask the administration about the name change on that.
That makes me think, can you just throw anything in there?
Well, a title is just a title, just like the cover of a book a book. It is an issue of trade, and we want to make sure that whatever is ultimately passed or rejected by Congress is looked at with our opinions and will ultimately be based upon our views of really how this has to work for workers throughout North America.
How can workers help? Now that the text is out there, it's on the internet, how can they make their voices heard?
Well,
yay or nay?
Well, first, what I would recommend is don't listen to me.
Go read it for yourself.
Go read it for yourself. It's not that hard. It's very long. Mm-hmm. It's very tedious. There are some things you might want to skip around, mm-hmm. but go look at the labor chapter, chapter 23. Go look at the chapter on investor to state dispute resolution mechanisms. Go look at other chapters that will affect you and our members, your brothers and sisters, and your communities. Take a look at it and decide for yourself if this is something that will hurt you and your brothers and sisters, your fellow workers, or will it help them on it?
Any closing thoughts, Owen, before we leave?
Well, we've been arguing very hard for a long time that fair trade, trade that lifts all boats, is the only thing that we'll look at seriously on this. So we are going to look at it seriously. We know how painful NAFTA has been to not only manufacturing workers in the U.S. and Canada, but we know how painful trade agreements have been to workers throughout the world, which is why we're taking this very, very seriously. And it's why we've argued very hard in the past. We testified, for example, at the opening hearings on what we believed should go into NAFTA, many of the same things I've just talked to you about. So we'll be looking at this agreement to see if those suggestions that we strongly urged our negotiators to do have been incorporated. And we'll be looking to see if we can make certain that this indeed is a fair trade agreement, not a trade agreement that represents business as usual.
So the Machinist Union has not said yay or nay. You know, jury's still out. We're going through line by line.
We've said yay or nay. We have said some of the things that are troubling about us. Mm-hmm. We have repeated our strong concerns with respect to it, mm-hmm. and we'll continue to do so in the hopes that it can be changed.
Okay. Thank you so much for stopping by, Owen. We always appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Turning legalese into English for us. Thank you.
All right.
Well, you too can make your voices heard. You can join us for the latest information on trade and globalization from the workers' perspective. Keep an eye on our iMail. It's our twice weekly email newsletter, and that is delivered straight to your inbox. We also post it to our website, goiam.org. And join the conversation. Let us know what you think about the new trade agreement by commenting on this video. What do you think about preserving good union jobs with livable wages in North America, including Mexico and Canada, not just the United States? Well, here we have a comment from Roland James, who says, Chapter 19, retention is a big win for Canada. So that's coming from Roland James. We appreciate him for commenting there as well. Roland also says, he also says higher wage is a win for Mexico, as well as the other two parties to the agreement. And we agree, as that's what we're hoping for, to raise the standard of living for everyone in all three countries. And hopefully, starting with North America, we can help it spread throughout the world. We know we have organizations like the United Nations and like Industrial, our global union, that are trying to raise the standard of living all across the world. James Powell is coming to us from Local Lodge 2003. District 75, so we're glad that you're joining us, James. Dennis Pena, Dina, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, Dina. Dina Pena from Local Lodge 1487 in Chicago. I should look at the monitor that's closer to me so I can see it. So thanks for joining us, Dina, as well. We appreciate all of you who are making comments. Don Barker says, go IAM. Thank you, Don. Glad you decided to tune in. So keep the comments coming. Thank you so much for commenting already. We love labor history, so we try to take a look back whenever we can. And this week in history, the world got its first glimpse of the Boeing Company 747 half a century ago in the fall of 1968 as the first jetliner rolled out of the factory in Everett, Washington, which had been built to produce the aircraft. We are so proud of our IAM members who build aircraft that so many people fly all around the world. Well, the Machinists Union partnered with the Chesapeake Bay chapter of the Coalition of Labor Union Women to host a screening of the documentary on Dolores Huerta last week. Now, she's the labor leader and civil rights activist who co-founded the National Farm Workers Association, which is now the United Farm Workers. Huerta is now 88 years young and stopped by the screening to meet members of the audience. You can see all of them there, the ones who stuck around. The documentary is simply called Dolores and shows her fight against corporate greed, gender bias, and police brutality. Well, if you're a Machinists Union member and you need training, time is running out to sign up for classes at our William W. Wimpasinger Education and Technology Center in Hollywood, Maryland. Registrations are due now for the following classes: the District 142 Safety Conference, and also this is the last week to sign up for the Advanced Communicators class. Friday, October 5th is the deadline. Now, next year's schedule will be out soon. If you want more information, just go to the website, wimpasinger.iamaw.org. As far as our meetings go, we have lots of state council meetings coming up. Here's the list. The Arkansas State Council of Machinists meets this weekend, October 6th to the 7th in Hot Springs. The Arizona State Council meets October 13th in Tucson. The Georgia Council meets October 15th to the 16th in Augusta. The Michigan State Council meets October 19th to the 20th in Jackson. Tennessee State Council meets October 19th to the 24th in Nashville. And the Indiana State Council meets October 26th to the 28th in Nashville, Indiana. I never knew until this week that there was a Nashville, Indiana. And our special events include a car show that you see right here. The Rides for Guides car show is October 13th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Wimpasinger Center in Southern Maryland. The rain date is October 27th, and the show benefits our favorite charity, Guide Dogs of America, and is held in conjunction with Automotive Local 1486 in Washington, D.C. It is $20 to enter. Elsewhere, the AFL-CIO's Metal Trades Conference is next week in Las Vegas. And Guide Dogs of America's biggest fundraiser of the year is in November with three events: the Clay Sporting Event, the Hogs for Dogs Motorcycle Ride, and the Charity Banquet that Saturday night. IAM members travel from all over the country to attend this event for Guide Dogs of America, November 15th to the 17th in Las Vegas. It's always a good time, and they've made it a little bit more casual now. Well, thank you for taking the time to watch this week's episode of Activate Live. We will see you next Wednesday, same social media platform. Remember, you can watch and comment on Activate Live at your convenience.